It's Sam Cedar launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. You can get a free audiobook of your choice. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report for a free audiobook.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, April 27th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Today on the program, Cliff Schechter, because it's Friday and we're casual. Also on the program, Matthew Film Guy, could be dressing me down. I don't think I've watched many of his movies lately, and I feel badly about that. Also on the program today, CISPA, looking at a veto. Will we have transparency and know how much money broadcast networks make from political advertising? We're just days away from May 1st. May Day, folks. May Day. Which means stay at home. Don't go to work. Also, one of the most insane opinion pieces I've ever read as to why we should get rid of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. You folks were right. And the Obama administration, once again, backing off regulations because somebody cried.
Let's drill, baby, drill, not stall, baby, stall.
That woman is an idiot.
Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that party. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
Hello, human beings. This episode of the Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com. It's the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles. They've got all types of literature. They have audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Our listeners of the Majority Report can get a free Audible book. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. You can pick up Griftopia, Bubble Machines, Vampire Squids, and The Long Con by Matt Taibbi. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. You can get any free audio book that you want. I was just recommending Taibbi's book because it was great. That's audiblepodcast.com/majority report. And also, that's free.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services, you know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.com.
You know, I never really recognized the that Northeast accent that Jimmy Reefer Cake had in that, but it's Cliff Schechter. Cliff Schechter, welcome to the program.
Thank you, sir. It's wicked cool.
You can't get there from here.
I have to go outside to the car. Yeah, we could probably sit here and do this all day, couldn't we?
Yeah. Now, I got to warn everybody. There's a guy literally constructing something in the office next door. We spoke to him about it yesterday. The only thing he said to us, he stopped for the moment. He won't stop today. Yesterday he said, like, I'm a veteran, and so I don't even want to know about what you guys are doing in there.
So you think there are big Caligula-like orgies going on in your
I don't know. Maybe he is familiar with our work, and he is some type of right-winger. I don't know what being a veteran has to do with it, but so if there's any...
He doesn't ask, and he doesn't tell, so I guess what he's trying to say.
Exactly. And so I've had to put something in my left ear so that I can actually focus on what you're saying. So if I'm a little spacey today, forgive me, but... Well, Cliff,
I thought it was probably just because of all that money you lost in Vegas.
Well, that's, believe me, that's still ringing in my ears. And when I got the smack upside my head when I told Mickey I had lost $200, I'll tell you something. It was not pretty around the Cedar household. but, you know, I took it out of Milo's college education fund, so.
Not like she'll notice it for a while.
But,
college probably won't exist by the time she gets to go anyhow, so it's worth thinking about that.
Right. I mean, $200 at this point ain't going to help us, particularly today. We are – I mean, let's start with this. You know, this has been sort of an interesting week in terms of bringing out where the Republican Party is on some of the just sort of the most basic, you know, sort of no-brainer pieces of legislation. The I don't know which is more offensive. The first is, you know, the Stafford loans. On July 1st, the Stafford loans, which are government-provided loans for higher education, in 2007 there was a halving of the interest rates, and they are now around about 3.8%, which is actually not terribly low relative to interest rates that are going around these days.
That's true.
And 3.4%. They will double to 6.8% on July 1st. And the Republicans are insisting. Now, we're talking about $6 billion here, which would immediately go away if you pass the Buffett rule, let's say.
Right.
I mean, and the Republicans have said, you know, this is a meaningless amount when it comes to the Buffett rule. Of course, when it comes to providing reasonable loans to people to go to college, then all of a sudden it's you need to cut. And they're proposing, I guess they passed in the House a bill that would get this money back by cutting into preventative care that is going to be provided by the Affordable Care Act, assuming that's even in existence 12 months from now.
Like breast cancer screenings and things of that sort. So
silly
you have to
things.
Actually hand it to the Republicans because it's kind of a twofer.
Yeah, exactly.
They've managed to piss off younger voters and women, two groups that they're doing astonishingly well with right now. That they're obviously in the 30% range, so you want to work hard to do that. Yeah, well, you know, exactly. I mean, this was one thing, and we'll talk about the other one too, I assume, but these are the types of things that weren't controversial, and people want to kind of pretend that, oh, you know, both parties do it, and they've both gotten more extreme and all this kind of stuff that you know, Tom Friedman's probably writing about right now.
Right.
You know, it's abject silliness, because, again, most of the Obama agenda for this year was stuff over for the last few years, the big items anyhow, were things that, like, were invented by the Republicans.
The Affordable Care Act, invented by the Heritage
Foundation.
Affordable
Care Act being one, cap and trade, which started under George H.W. Bush with acid rain when that was an issue. I mean, and it was a Republican idea for market-based, as they put it, environmental protection. I mean, these were things that came from the Republicans. And now
77 Republicans voted for the halving of the Stafford interest rates in 2007. Now, think about and many of those Republicans are still in the House. When
right.
you contemplate having it in 2007 as opposed to now, I mean, you're talking about real money that is going to come out of the pockets of people who have gone to college and are paying student loans. So at a time when we have an economy which is still in the crapper, this is maybe it's a threefer for the Republicans, because they also managed to sort of prevent to add a reverse stimulus to the economy. We're seeing the impact of austerity in Europe now, Great Britain and now Spain in a double dip recession. And it's amazing to me that I was on Radigan, I guess it was a year and a half ago. It was like December or September of 2010. And there was Britain is starting to impose austerity. Is this going to be a test for us? I mean, in other words, is this country going to look as a model as what's going forward? And I said, not if it doesn't work. Because and then we will see no discussion of it. And I'm still waiting for it to come back and Radigan to say, all right, let's go back a year ago. No, there's none of that. It's just unbelievable.
Well, just as there hasn't been a lot of discussion of what has worked. The example being the stimulus, which should have been bigger, but it didn't. People talked a little bit about how whatever it saved created 2 million jobs plus. But not as much as they should have. I mean, that should have been a pretty serious headline. And again, this is another example. I think the key thing here, we're going to talk, I think, in a second about the Violence Against Women Act,
right?
Which I definitely would love to want to talk about, expand upon that point. And I think in that, the best thing that I could see, okay, so is what crazy teabagger Senator Mike Lee from Utah, who was one of the new crazies elected in 2010, had to say about why he voted against it, which is there are just things the federal government shouldn't do, the state should do. And see, so where we've gone, and this is important here, this distinction is, and I'm not using hyperbole here, I'll be careful in my language just to sort of be clear that I'm not. This is pre-progressive era stuff. Okay, we're not people love to say, oh, they want to take us back to the mid-ages, and I say that stuff all the time too, and it's fun. But if you really want to be sort of have an accurate historical timeline of policy, with cap and trade, with the Heritage created healthcare plan that became Romney Care and eventually became a largely what Obama's healthcare plan was about, these things, that was a response to the Clinton healthcare initiative in the 90s. Cap and trade was a response to just environmental regulation. The Republicans, at least in the 80s, 90s, and really for a while there, felt a need to actually propose policy.
Right.
To say, here's our response and here's how we would get to, and it might have been a stupid response and it might have been at times one that wouldn't have worked, but they at least felt that need.
Right. There was a shared set of at least there was lip service to a shared set of goals. In other words, we believe that everybody should have health care. We believe that people going to college is a good thing. We believe that violence against women is a bad thing. I mean,
there are things the federal government needs to do because it will not be done if left to the states. It simply won't be. And we're now back at the Republican, the philosophy. It was there were times it was obviously the Democratic philosophy too. So I shouldn't even, because this was Civil War, you can go back there. So we won't even do Republican or Democratic. This was the right-wing retrograde philosophy, pre-progressive era, which is the federal government really didn't have the right to do anything. Everything would be left to the states. And even if the federal government could do something, like let's say violence against women or, the kind of Commerce Clause stuff that would get you health care, so this brings in the Supreme Court's view of the world too, they don't have that right. So even if they're admitting that the Violence Against Women Act is something that could work, doesn't matter. The federal government shouldn't be stepping into our lives. Everything should be left to the state. To realize how radical that is, you honestly need to sit down and read history books and realize what we're talking about here. We're not talking pre-FDR. We're talking pre-Teddy Roosevelt now.
That's right. That's right. I mean, this is a throwback to the late 1800s. This is basically a worldview that, and it's I don't even know if I necessarily credit them with feeling this is really a question of a state's rights issue or, you know, the scope of the federal government. I think it's really they just don't want resources going towards this. I mean, it's really in many ways an unwinding of just of the whole notion of society.
That's exactly right.
And that we are in some ways bound together, that all ships – you know, in this instance, it's a rising tide raises all ships. And they're just like, well, you know what? We could raise some ships more if we just sort of selectively had that tide rise.
Well, and it's just sort of like, you know, let the chips fall where they may. And if you're unlucky, you're unlucky. Too bad for you. If your state doesn't happen to protect you from violence against women, that's just the way it is. You know, the federal government could do this, but they don't have that right. Now, of course, it's always corrupt, too, because the less the federal government does, it allows – I mean, as we all know, the state legislatures are easier to buy.
Much easier.
Right, as our local, you know, court systems and whatever.
Right, I mean, so Alec, it's perfect timing, you know, because, I mean, that the whole – the whole notion, you know, you send a state legislator on a junket and you provide child care for them and you sit them down, you know, there's just not as much opportunity for people to have access to these guys, but you fly them into a junket a couple of times a year. Of course, there it is. And that's why they've been focusing on that for so many years.
That's why Alec does that, and these guys, they get that, and that's the reason why you hear the craziness of some of these guys that want to go back, you know, repealing the amendment and allowing, you know, the getting rid of the election of our senators back. You know, that was a progressive reform, because back 100 years ago, it was much easier if you could buy a state legislature than you could buy also a U.S. senator, because they would appoint them.
Right.
And so all this stuff is connected, and they know this. So, yeah, maybe let the chips fall where they may and all that kind of crap. But what it really leads to is, you know, is the kind of crony capitalism that is even well beyond where we are. It leads to what happened with the railroad magnates back then and the oil guys and whatever, because there was no countervailing force to regulate them, because they just bought off the smaller guys and the federal government was by definition weak. And so that is what you're looking at, and that's what ends up happening. It ends up being that that's why when I read that remark by Mike Lee, that just so perfectly laid it out what they think, which is, well, yeah, that could be done in the federal level. I mean, the kind of thing where they even – some of them will acknowledge that there could be improvement, but that's just not the role of the federal government.
And
it doesn't do those things.
It also puts lie to the notion that you will reduce the corruption in government by reducing the size of government. But the fact is that when you get the government on a smaller scale, it's just easier to corrupt.
That's exactly right. I mean, yeah, that's a joke. I mean, because I mean, we have the control group experiment. We can look at the way things were. There's a reason why Teddy Roosevelt stood up and started busting trusts, and he and Woodrow Wilson started advocating for a national income tax, and all the other, you know, and you know, the election of U.S. senators and all these other reforms. I mean, even some of the things that have been, you know, in a way bastardized and taken away from the original intent, like some of the referenda and other methods, because back then they needed to get around state legislators.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because there was so much rampant corruption. And so this was how they handled it. So we're talking about, you know, the first phase was the progressive era, and some of the things we were just talking about. The second phase was, of course, the New Deal. And the third was the civil rights era. And these guys are trying to repeal all three of them.
Right.
When they're talking about what they're talking about, it's not even a matter of, I don't really know whether black people should be equal to white people. That's none of my business. The federal government has no right to do that. Throw it back to the states. I mean, you know, whether you have a right to be protected from some corporate interest that's hurting you, well, the federal government has no right to do that. And it's behind these calls to get rid of the EPA and the other things like that. So, again, remember, Nixon created the EPA. Right. I mean, there was the Republican Party, whatever you thought of them for a long period of time, it came to acknowledge that there were things that only the federal government could do, that there was a federal government role. And sure, they would try to find the more market based, I'll put that in quotes because not always true, approach, or the less intrusive from their point of view approach. Of course, unless it was social issues where they want to stick, you know, they want to take the transvaginal ultrasound to you. But for the most, when it came to these other types of things, that was what they wanted to do. And that's why this is so radical, and that this is a base Republican position now. This is a Tea Party position. Dick Lugar, who was always whatever you think of him, a guy that basically was a common sense kind of traditional Midwestern Republican who wasn't right wing and nuts, even if he wasn't someone, you know, you and I would say was a good progressive senator. He voted against the Violence Against Women Act. Why? Because he's locked in a primary with a teabagging nut in Indiana, their state treasurer. And so this has become now a base issue for them.
31.
You can't vote for things.
31 Republicans voted against the reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act, which was first enacted in 1994. Now, this is why they supposedly have a problem with it. One, it provides federal grants to domestic violence organizations subject only to their ability to prove that they just got to prove that they do not discriminate against homosexual and transgender victims. Okay, so if there's violence happening amongst a couple and they're gay, you can discriminate against them. Otherwise, the idea that you would disallow that is problematic for them. There's also a provision about Native Americans. It shifts authority of tribal courts over to domestic violence matters with non-tribal aggressors. In other words, there's a real problem on Native American reservations, because if you have a Native American woman or man, I guess, and they've married a non-Native American, and there's abuse that's going on there, the jurisdiction is really messed up. And I don't understand how somebody has a problem with that, really, just providing sort of a civil procedure issue. And they apparently also object that it provides additional visas for battered, undocumented women who agree to cooperate with law enforcement.
Right. And you know, those, of course, are all already base Republican issues. You need to hate gays. You need to hate immigrants. And, you know, Native Americans barely exist. But those are all positions you can actually get away with, too. In other words, they can say all that stuff, and they can't say, which is what I think Lee accidentally said, you know, and that's why I think those are all, yes, those are all part of it, but I think it's broader.
Right. No, I think those are the fig leaves. I mean, those are the things that when they talk to a reporter. But otherwise, I think it's really just going back that there just seems to be this. And, you know, I for the life of me, I can't quite figure it out. But there seems to be a resurgence amongst conservatives in this country that a reactionary pushback on the idea that women may be full citizens in our country. I mean, I don't know how really it just sounds insane to say that, but that's basically what we're seeing. And, you know, Katrina Vandenheuvel was on the program yesterday. We were talking about this. There's marches going around the country tomorrow via unitewomen.org, basically pushback on this war against women. But this is more of it. I mean, it really is.
It just shows you it's ideological, because if these guys had any political sense, they would, of course, know that they're killing themselves electorally, but in everywhere but maybe a dozen states. But, I mean, the truth is that it just shows you they're zealots.
Right.
They can't stop themselves.
And the other thing is
what they believe.
It's not just ideological. I think that there is an electoral strategy here. It's just not a broad one. You know, I mean, I think that, you know, the problem that the Republican Party has and thus the rest of the country, I mean, this is aside from my issues with the Obama administration and Democratic Party, is that their electoral base, you know, all these senators are not running national campaigns. They're running campaigns with an electoral base in their state. And certainly these congressmen are even in a narrower basis.
Oh, yeah.
And these people.
I mean, the senators, at least, can only get away with this kind of crap. I mean, if you say 31 senators, for the most part, you know, I mean, I shouldn't say get away with it, but someone like Scott Brown isn't going to be able to do that, or
right.
It would be a Snow or whatever. I mean, there's only certain states you can do this, you know, and get away with it in. But obviously in Congress, you're talking about a whole different level, because even swing states or more progressive states, let's face it, everybody's got a district or two where all the crazies are gathered together. You know what I mean? And so it becomes something even more, it becomes something worse. And obviously a lot of these guys were elected in the swing election of 2010. But this all goes back to, again, the Republican Party being taken over by the far right and nobody there having the courage to stand up to people that used to be called the crazies, that used to be the birchers, the sideshow, the ones that even Buckley couldn't live with, you know, and others. But it also, you know, and what's his name's newer, I don't know if I'd call it a new book, but recent book, Tom Frank, you know,
yeah.
Great writer, you know, What's the Matter with Kansas, and which he talked about in that book, but the one more recently, it's the Democratic Party's fault, too.
Pity the
billionaire. Because a lot of these voters that used to, when they stood up strongly for what they believed in and didn't seem, you know, tacit and weak and accommodating and stood up particularly on economic issues and fought on those issues and fought as, you know, as patriotic American union member, hardworking American, you know, then they won some of these types of voters that may have more retrograde social views. But now there's whole swaths of the country where Democrats have absolutely no appeal because they're not appealing to these people economically and obviously in the social issues, they're crazy.
Exactly.
And so it's sort of a combination of those factors that's led to this. That these dangerous people getting into office. Think about the U.S. Senate, 31 people. You're getting towards a third of the Senate thought they could vote. They thinks, quite frankly, they can vote against the Violence Against Women Act, and they feel comfortable with that.
Right. I mean, that's strip away every other aspect of it from a policy standpoint. The idea that there are 31 senators who feel secure in voting against something called the Violence Against Women Act is stunning. You know, that's like we're going to vote again. We have a I hate apple pie and ice cream is going to be outlawed bill. And well, we got 31 guys who are willing to sign on to it. I mean, it's just bizarre. But let's talk because I know you don't I know we're a little bit pressed for time today.
We're good. We're actually good. It got a little delayed.
Okay. Great. Great. All the better. So let's talk about this Supreme Court Arizona immigration law, because I've touched on it yesterday, but this could have some pretty big implications. And the amazing thing is that there's still this sort of anti-immigrant fervor, particularly on the right in this country, when there's really no evidence at this point that there's certainly no evidence that it's creating any increase. The idea, let me put it this way. The idea that you can just sort of randomly profile people and send and attempt to deport them is not going to have any positive impacts on this country. And there's no policy basis for this law. And we're going to see a Supreme Court that I think is going to sign off on states' abilities to pass these laws. And it's low-hanging fruit for these, demagogic politicians.
Yeah, you know, another thing. I mean, I hate to have this whole show be about, you know, looking back to the 19th century, but I know that you have Digby on the show relatively often, and she did I was reading the other day, and I thought did a great job of putting up the kind of these old maps, and we see these things again and again, whether you do it by the electoral vote margins, blue states, red states, whether you do it by where there are stand your ground laws and the rest, the divide between the old sort of slave and then Jim Crow states and the territories out west that were open to slavery versus the non-slave, it just seems to still be with us. And on this issue, particularly Arizona, because this is, again, hating brown people, pretty close to hating black people, if you look along where these measures have been either have been proposed or have passed, like in Alabama as well as Arizona and others, I mean, it's like almost identical to the map. And it just it's sort of depressing in a way. It just makes you sit there and be like, really? I mean, some things have changed because some northerners and others – I don't want to say just northerners. There's a lot of good people in the south and in rural areas. But I'm just saying obviously some states have more retrograde people than others do, more backwards people, let's just say. There's always great people in every state, I should be clear about. But obviously a lot of people with a more progressive outlook have moved down to Florida, and so that place has changed somewhat, right? Not fully, but somewhat. But – again, like, it's still the same, where this stuff is still with us. As you just point out, there's no need for these laws. You know what I mean? They're just unnecessary. They're just about racially profiling. They're giving police, in a way, it does to the police what the Stand Your Ground laws do, where they don't know how to react when some guy's just shot somebody. What do you do? You know, I mean, it gives some racist cops more of a license, but even cops who are doing their job or good, hardworking people and just trying to, you know, do their job every day, they're pushed into a situation where they need to be checking somebody's papers, you know?
You know, it's
not good.
We'll link to that Digby post. I saw it, and it really something you have to fully digest. You need to see the visual there. But, it's interesting because, you know, when you think about everything that went down in the former Yugoslavia, when you talk about sort of like animosities that have existed between groups that in Europe that, you know, and in the Middle East and really in many throughout the world, you see these sort of ethnic clashes or ethnic resentments that span over the course of, you know, 300, 400, 500 years. So on one hand, you know, it is in this country, we have a presumption that can't be, you know, that the idea that, you know, there are still, you know, there's still wounds from the Civil War that are, and it's just sort of a bizarre concept. But at the same time,
but as attitudes and cultures too.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's resentments, but as I wanted to say, and again, I don't want to, I'm very careful. I don't want to cast aspersion on everybody because again, 39% of people in Alabama voted for Obama. That means that almost 4 in 10 did. So, I mean, and you know, I'm not saying Obama's perfect, but let's say the more progressive option. So, you know, I want to be clear about that. But again, the overall culture of these places,
right.
you have to look at that and say the ones that have changed, you know, if you want to call it the New South or whatever, the ones that are at least becoming more progressive, North Carolina, you know, and Virginia and Florida, and believe it or not, which will scare the right, within about, I think by 2016, Texas is going to head into North Carolina territory and probably be a lean Republican swing state because of growing, you know, with younger populations, places that have great universities, places that have growing Hispanic populations, places that have Northerners retiring there. And I'm writing this, you know, I'm going to be writing about in my syndicated column I'm working on as soon as I get off the phone with you here. But when you put it alongside what's going on, it just makes you say, you know, I mean, can this country remain whole? And I'm not trying to be, I'm not trying to have hyperbole here. But again, two things also happened while all this craziness we're discussing happened. Connecticut just got rid of the death penalty.
Right.
And California is actually working now to liberalize abortion laws.
Yeah, I spoke about that law yesterday, but the Connecticut thing is – the Connecticut – you know, I saw that story, and I meant to pull it, and it is really – it is – there is this sort of like, you know, dichotomy where you progress continues in certain areas on certain
gay
things.
Gay marriage in New York.
Gay marriage in New York and in other states. You've got even Republicans in New Hampshire – the legislator passing legislation, which looks like it's going to be vetoed by a Democrat, sadly, but liberalizing at least marijuana use for very ill people, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, so on one hand, my point is this. On one hand, you know, it shouldn't surprise us that these cultural sort of problems still exist in these states where you aren't literally almost like not breeding out the people, but, you know, attrition and being replaced by outside ideas is starting to break it down. And also, you know, the idea, you know, what is also interesting is that you have this notion that there is such a strong still in the South in many areas, this notion of, you know, these wounds from the Civil War. But the idea that somehow being slaves for 100 years wouldn't impact the culture of African Americans in this country. They wouldn't still be feeling the impact of that, both in terms of sort of like internally within the culture and also externally in terms of the way that they are systemically treated. It's just interesting the way these issues are not done.
It was actually like a couple hundred years, you know?
Right.
So, I mean, it even goes, no, exactly. I mean, and that's obnoxious and frankly naive. But I mean, to me, I think it's almost like there's the way I'm thinking about it, at least in terms of my column, and I'm happy to be told that I'm wrong, but it seems to me there are three kinds of states right now. There are ones moving like Connecticut and California and New York in that direction. There are the ones where that are headed way in a backward direction. And there's ones like the one I'm in right now, Ohio, and others that we call swing states, where it seems to me it's kind of like what we talked about earlier with the state legislatures. Statewide, for the most part, there are exceptions to this, obviously. Rick Scott got elected in a crazy year in Florida and whatever. But for the statewide, generally don't elect the complete lunatics. All right. Generally, they elect anywhere from progressives, like here in Ohio, Sherrod Brown, to sort of traditional conservatives. You know what I mean? And I'm not obviously those categories fluctuate a little bit. But these states are conservative enough in certain pockets that you can get some congressional members, like Gene Schmidt, who just lost to somebody more right-wing than her in a primary. And you can get state legislative members who can do a lot of damage. You know what I mean? And that seems to me to be the three kinds of states. And so these states almost go back and forth a little bit, the ones in the middle. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And that seems to be where we are, you know? And again, at some point, what you tell me, what do you think holds, you know, Connecticut and Alabama together in 50 years? I mean, I can only see these places, if there's not a strong federal government enforcing certain laws on everybody like they did to getting rid of Jim Crow, if we head back towards states' rights more and more, somebody needs to explain to me what those two places are going to have, if anything, at all, in common in 30 or 40 years and how this country sort of remains one, because I'm not sure. I don't know how that happens.
You know, it'll be, I mean, it's an interesting concept to think. I mean, I because at one point, as the as states like that push themselves to the margins, you know, they got to be, and they're not thinking this way now, but they got to be thinking like, hey, what happens if Connecticut happens to look at the data that shows that what they put into the federal government, they only get a fraction of that back? As opposed to a net gain on what they put into the federal government, as compared to a state like Alabama, which puts in less than it gets back from the federal government. And at one point, you know,
right. And I'll throw in on top of that. You know, I'll tell you this. You know, the gun issue that I work on becomes a bigger issue in gun violence. You know, this is why some of the people I've worked with have gotten so involved in this, because the people getting shot for the most part in New York and Connecticut and places like that, those guns aren't coming from New York and Connecticut that have stronger gun laws. They're coming from places that have weaker gun laws out in the middle of the country, in the South, and whatever. And I think I can say that because I live in the middle of the country. Ohio is one of those places, sadly. So, you know, what point do people say, you know, I'm tired of your guns coming in here and killing our people. I'm tired of our spending money on you, even though you want to keep cutting spending all the time. It's a great question. You know, I mean, I don't know. It's why I was thinking about it and choosing to kind of explore it, with the whole Arizona and the Violence Against Women Act things being kind of the tipping point in my thinking this week. In my thinking, wow, you know, at what point what do Mike Lee and Barbara Boxer have in common?
You know, it's funny because there's been studies recently that have shown that the fact that these states and the people in these states are so reliant on or absorbing so much federal largesse in some ways, and because that largesse is protected, I'm talking about Social Security and Medicare, in many instances Medicaid, food stamps, that it frees them up to criticize government aid in some weird, bizarre fashion. Which is why you see this disparity between senators coming from these states who are the most virulent anti-federal government voices out there, yet their constituents are the most reliant on federal government largesse.
Isn't it the usual projection? It was sort of like, Massachusetts passed gay marriage, they're going to crush all of us. And then Massachusetts had the lowest divorce rate in the country.
Right.
You know what I mean? I mean, it's like this, you know, it's sort of like the Larry Craig type Republicans. We must ban gay marriage, you know, next week. This week I've got a couple stalls to visit. You know, I mean, it's like it's that kind of stuff. It almost seems like it's this projection where these people feel terrible about themselves, and so they want to go and make it like it's everybody else who's really doing it when it's them. I mean, a classic, of course, you know, when you hear Sarah Palin open her yap about anything socialism, this or that, Alaska basically lives off of oil money.
What happened to Sarah Palin? Is she still around? I mean, I haven't heard. She hasn't been in the news. Someone shut down her Facebook account?
Did they? Exactly.
Well, I don't know.
We've been covering her every Facebook utterance.
I guess we should say that Newt Gingrich
is she not on the Today Show this week, too? Go ahead,
is she? Oh, that's right. She did the Today Show a couple of weeks ago. Newt Gingrich, gone. Did you see that picture of him that was tweeted out there? We should link to this picture.
I didn't see it.
I retweeted it. It's a side shot of Newt Gingrich at a zoo. And if anybody's wondering where that,
which is the walrus, is where, that what it is?
If anybody's wondering where that $4 million that his campaign owes, what it was spent on, I think you can get a sense of it. It is.
I think a Newt Gingrich Chris Christie sumo wrestling match could be a way to work off the campaign.
I don't know what kind of shape Gingrich was in 7 months ago, but he doesn't look good.
That's what I'm saying. He's getting to Chris Christie territory. I think they could sell some serious tickets for that.
I wouldn't be surprised. This whole Newt Gingrich thing has been a scam from the beginning. I really do think it comes down to his publisher said, yeah, we're not going to do a second printing of your book. So
That's what I'm saying. Like, do you not think at this point, if somebody said you have to come out in a big diaper and you can sumo wrestle Chris Christie. If you do that, it will sell an extra million copies of your book. Do you have any doubt that Newt Gingrich would be out there with the diaper in 2 seconds?
I think that he would take
some
time.
The man won't do.
I think he would put his hand on his. I think he would put his chin in his hand and think about it.
Which
and
one?
Come up with some interesting policy benefit that could be there from. In other words, let me just. It's a profound idea. The idea that maybe. Maybe we could do this. We could Lincoln Douglas sumo wrestling.
If he put the chin in his hand, though, where would he put the other three chins?
Touche.
I can't help myself. I'm being an asshole now. I know.
Touche. Touche. All right. Well, you know, another interesting week. And I am so sick of this presidential campaign already. But I guess we've got another, 6-7 months.
Can I just say quickly along those lines, because you brought up when we talked, I think, last week, how tired you are of the feigned outrage over stuff. And, I mean, now we've seen it the last 2 days over this idiotic Monica Crowley tweet. You have to have seen this, right?
What was this where she tell me what happened again with Monica.
Sandra Fluck got engaged, and so Monica Crowley sent out a tweet that said, you know, along the lines of
To a man.
To
question mark.
There you go. I was trying to think how exactly she phrased it, right? And it was like, I mean, I understand. Look, guys, most people who are listening right now, I'm sure there's a few haters out there. I'm with you on all this stuff. Don't give her the satisfaction or anything else of being outraged with her. She's a joke. The right reaction to that is to mock her.
Right.
And just be, you know, if you want to react in any way, don't get angry. Laugh about how pathetic these people are. I mean, they're just, you know, I mean, I remember the same reaction she had. She's like, liberals have no sense of humor. I remember that was what happened with the great Patricia Heaton, too, when I was going after her. And this is their response, you know, obviously, not to mention the least of which being, not the least of which, but I'm having a conversation with you right now, Sam Cedar, progressive comedian who happens to be very funny. But go beyond that to The Daily Show and Colbert and Bill Maher and whatever. And I think we can honestly say that easily by far the most funny people are on the left side of the aisle. Dennis Miller has progressively gotten less funny every year as he's gotten crazy.
I think he's gone beyond less funny. I don't think there's any room for him to get less funny. He's completely exhausted funny. In fact, I would argue he did that about 7 years ago. And I don't think he had much to begin with. But, yeah, Monica Crowley, I got to say this. You know, it's a stupid joke if it was a joke. I assume it was. At one point, I think she had sort of said, well, it was a serious question or whatever. It's a joke literally that my 6.5-year-old would, if she was...
Is well beyond making.
I mean, she actually, yeah. I mean, I'm trying to imagine, like, no, she would just be like, I don't get it. I mean, I seriously, like, I don't even get why that's a joke. But I have to say this about Monica Crowley. I don't know if there's anybody worse on radio than Monica Crowley. I co-hosted with her MSNBC when it was like live coast to coast.
Oh, did you step in for Ron Reagan?
Yeah, for like a day. And unfortunately for me, on that...
I'm not mocking her. I like Ron, by the way. I think he's a good guy.
Oh, no, I think so. Ron's great. But I'm saying it was unfortunate for me because that was on a day when Monica Crowley, when it was revealed who Deep Throat was. And
she worked for Nixon, so she must have been flipping out about that.
And it was just like, oh, my God. And then they brought on this guy, I can't remember his name, he was some right-wing operative who had been soliciting women who were not prostitutes to pay them
Jack
for sex.
Jack Burke, right?
Exactly. I think it was something like that.
I don't know how I knew it was him. I've debated Crowley before, too, on Fox. But, yes, I had the pleasure of debating Burke a few times. And
I think he came on and said that there was no Deep Throat. It was all made up or something like that. I can't remember what it was. But the whole thing was just a nightmare. And so, you know, like, I'm aware of who Monica Crowley is. But there are times when I will turn on my radio – because I like to listen to talk radio, and I particularly like to listen to right-wing talk radio. When I will be listening to WABC, I will forget that she has an afternoon show. I will be listening to her, and I'm like, that voice sounds familiar. I can't place it. But whoever's doing this is horrible at talk radio. I mean, just like she takes everything that is bad. I'm not even talking about what she says. I'm not even talking about the content per se, you know, because I listen to Limbaugh and I can appreciate this guy does a good show. But Hannity, right, for instance, is just a hack. He has never improved. It's stunning. Monica Crowley has adopted everything that is bad about Hannity, but seems to do it worse. I mean, just bad jokes, fake laughter from her producers. It is, you know, there are some things that are so bad they're good, and Monica Crowley's worse.
She's not one of those.
She's not even like. It's just
when I went on Get Sarah on TV, I thought. I mean, she was terrible too. She was in that wave post like Monica Lewinsky, where she got, you know, where they searched out every blonde they could find. That was when, you know, 2 years after Fox News launched too.
Right.
So they were searching out every blonde in the Coulter, Ingram, Crowley tradition to put on TV. And she, I mean, I debated her at least twice that I can think of. She never had an interesting or smart thing to say. That's not a shock. But you know, she made it very clear back then, and I know because we had some common friends, let's just put it that way, that she was going to use the Monica Lewinsky thing to make this a career. She got, like, an agent immediately. And, you know, I mean, she knew. She had blonde hair, and Fox was into that, and she didn't really have a brain, but she could say that I worked with Richard Nixon, and that was all that mattered.
Yeah, it was pretty stunning. And you know, one other thing I want to touch on. Well, actually, you know what? We're out of time. I'm sorry.
Oh,
I got to get Matthew. We've done 43 minutes. I didn't realize it.
Wow. Time just 46. Flies, Samuel. It's so much fun.
No, it is fun. Cliff Schechter, as always, a pleasure. We should do this again next Friday. Oh, and I want to remind people.
My schedule.
I want to remind you, of course, you know, May 1st is coming up. I'm not going to stop talking about it, but people are – hopefully we're going to see – I don't know that we'll see a general strike, but I think we're going to see a lot of activity and a lot of people taking the day off from work. And
what day of the week is that?
Where Tuesday.
All right. That's cool. Tuesday's a good day for me.
Beautiful.
I can still – I think, yeah, I mean, the weather's nice. Go for a march. I think I'm into it. I think people should do it. We need it.
Yeah, take the day off from school. Take the day off from work if you can. Go in, do a half day, do a long lunch, one of those long liquid lunches that we take around this office.
All Sam, right, Cliff. I will let you go because you got movie stuff to do, but thank you, buddy, and have a good week.
All right, take it easy. Cliff Schechter, right, everyone.
Bye.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to be talking to Matthew Film Guy. Oh, good. We got a new song in there. We're going to bring a new song. So that's going to be our May 1st resolution. Some new songs, some new music. Unfortunately, though, for you folks, my vocal stylings will not change. We'll be right back in just a moment with Matthew Film Guy, who's going to give us a recommendation for this week. We'll be right back after this. All right, we are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. On the phone, it is Matthew, film guy. I'm laughing just because I checked my text, and I just got a text from Jessica, who helps out with booking. She said, "God damn you." I'm not exactly sure why. I don't know why I'm even telling you that, Matthew, but welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you, Sam. It's a pleasure to be here. Maybe you thought that I would second the sentiment in some way, and not
well,
that I do.
You know, I got to be honest with you. I'm feeling guilty. I'm feeling guilty because
let's hear it.
I haven't watched your film recommendations, a lot of them. I've watched some, but you sent me an email the other day, and you gave me a list, and it, I said, "Matthew, are you going to be able to go tomorrow?" And he's like, "Have you watched any of the other films I recommended?" And then you gave me a list of the films, which is
it's a pretty good list.
It's a great list. But what really gave me the sense that you were mad at me was that you put a question mark after each title. So in other words, there's a list of 8 films. And so, "Have you watched any of the other films I recommended?" Question mark. Tokyo Story. Question mark.
Answer, no.
Cave of Forgotten Dreams. Question mark. Offside.
Answer, no.
Question mark.
Oh,
10.
That's a good one.
Question mark.
That's
Late Marriage. Question mark. The Boy with Green Hair. Question mark. What
Violet
happened was. Dot, dot, dot. Question mark.
Right.
Les Enfants. Question mark.
Yeah, those question marks are accusatory, aren't they?
That they certainly, I mean, I want to say that that's the great use of punctuation to express anger.
It's not anger, Sam. It's not anger. It's just sadness.
Indignation.
That no indignation. I don't take it personally. It's, you know, it's your loss, really,
well,
when it comes down to it.
Here's the good news. The good news is I got Apple TV now, too.
Wow. So 99
bucks.
iTunes?
$99. So, like, I am now really, I am so fully in the cut the cord, you know, in the wake of cut the cordness. There's almost nothing I can't get on my television now.
So there's almost no film that you can put on a list and not watch.
That's correct. Exactly.
Amazing.
And,
well, good. Congratulations.
You know what I watched last week? And, you know,
it was something recommended by Isabel Gillies, I know.
No, actually, well, don't tell her I said this, but
okay.
She recommended Chariots of Fire.
And I know, I heard that one.
Could not do that. I mean, I almost played that theme song once, but I'll tell you why I can't do that, because that movie, you know that song, the
Evangelist song?
The iconic dun 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 dun. That song, yes.
Right.
If I am not mistaken, at the time that song came out, I believe, you maybe double check this, it was around 1983 or 84. Or maybe
no, earlier.
82?
Earlier, it's 80 or 81. I was in kindergarten.
Okay,
I remember
81.
Very well.
But the song, you were in kindergarten?
Yeah.
You got to be, oh my God.
I remember running around the playground in slow motion doing that song. So yeah, it was about then.
That song, it was 81. Okay, that makes sense. All right, yes, 82 it would have been. Or maybe it was 81. I was working.
Let's get to the bottom of this.
I was working literally at a Five and Dime called, I think it was the Five and Ten in downtown Worcester. It was like it wasn't like a homey, you know, like general store. It was like basically the equivalent of a 99-cent store that exists today. And I had to clean the toilets and sweep up the massive amount of cockroaches in the storeroom and build like cardboard displays. And they listened to an AM station in Worcester, and that song came on every half hour.
Yeah.
And I literally seize up now when I hear that song. And just immediately am taken to the employee bathrooms, which were just horrible. No ventilation. And I just can't bring myself to do that. So
But didn't it make you feel like you were, you know, accomplishing something mythic and important while you were scrubbing toilets to that song?
Yes, I felt like I was winning a gold medal for.
Did you sort of scrub in slow motion around the toilet?
That's right. Yeah, that's what happened the first 20 or 30 times.
Right. And, well, there's no way Isabel could have known that. So
no, yeah. And I didn't want to hurt her feelings by telling her about it. And
she's
been to
trigger.
Brazil on a, you know, to a spa trip or something. So we'll get an update on that later. Have you been to? Have you done anything interesting recently? Spa?
Well, I did go on that yoga retreat. It was pretty interesting. It wasn't exactly relaxing in the way that I thought it was going to be. It was a little underprogrammed, I guess I'll say, but I had a good time. It was
what
on
does that
an
mean,
island.
Underprogrammed?
Well, it was a little chaotic. It was the first time the
Wait,
group
went
who
on a chaotic
on.
Yoga retreat.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I hope you got your money back.
No, I didn't. It wasn't that chaotic, but we wound up breaking off, Mary and I, my girlfriend, and sort of making our own plan and wound up doing less yoga that way. But we got to go to the beach, see the sunrise, go to a lot of nice restaurants on the island. The island is sort of underdeveloped.
You went to a yoga retreat on an island that was chaotic, and so you left it midway through?
More or less. We still stayed in the place that they had rented for us, and we met up with them once or twice. But
what island?
It was sort of... It was Culebra. It was like one of the sort of less developed islands off the coast of Puerto Rico, sort of a neighbor to Vieques, where they used to do like military testing and stuff. So it's like there's a couple like nice bungalows, but we were like 6 miles from the beach, so we had to take a bike across all these hills. It was a little third worldy between us and the beach. So yeah, it was not. I sort of went into it sight unseen and just thought I was put myself in the hands of these people and. Paid for that a little bit, but the woman who puts it on is very sweet, and she and her husband are very nice, and so I don't really blame them. But it was not as blissed out as I might have expected it to be. So not. Like
I thought
Brazil
you were going
spa.
To like. I thought you were going to like Western Massachusetts for this thing. I didn't realize you were going
to
Puerto Rico.
It was tropical. Yeah, it was tropical. That was the best part of it.
God.
Yeah, I know.
I resent you.
Well, you could go on.
Now I'm happy. I didn't watch any of your movies. You know what I watched?
You're happy.
Tinker,
yeah.
Tailor, Soldier, Spy.
Oh, see, I wanted to watch that myself.
Yeah.
I was just in Boston for a corporate video shoot, and it was on the pay per view, and I didn't get to watch it. It was
$15. I watched that. No, I didn't watch it. I think I watched it on Amazon streaming.
Oh, you're branching out. You mean you're
no,
recommending
I've
movies
always
to
had
yourself
Amazon.
Now?
My Roku has an Amazon app.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
The problem is your Apple TV won't do that because, you know, they're so uptight about maintaining their closed circuit with iTunes. But the good news is that supposedly Apple TV, you'll be able to stream your computer's contents, browser on your TV. And once that happens, all bets are
off.
It's
all over.
Yeah. Forget about Google TV. That's out the window.
Yeah. But, Sam, I don't want to open an ethical conversation here, but are you not familiar with the pleasures of BitTorrenting?
I am familiar with that. And
okay.
I'm
just saying, with a person who says limited free time as you are, you know, it opens up a whole world of films that you wouldn't see otherwise.
I know, but I get confused on what I'm supposed to be able to BitTorrent. No, you know what I really want to do is get into Usenet, but that's a whole nother story for another day.
Sure.
But so.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do? And meanwhile, I ran into. Did you know that I ran into Cross when I was in Vegas last week?
You know, it's so funny that you bring that up. I wanted to touch on that because I love that story that you told that echoed the scene with Matt Besser from Pilot Season.
Right. Okay, now, Matthew, now, just to catch people up here. Now, Matthew Film Guy, as you may or may not know, played my assistant and was my assistant on A Bad Situationist. I then hired him to play my assistant in Pilot Season, which was the sequel to Who's the Caboose?
I bring
you around as my lucky charm. And then there was that Matt Besser story where Matt Besser from UCB fame, I did a scene with him where, yes, and I felt exactly like that. And, it seems to be increasing now.
Yeah, but here's the thing, Sam. You wrote that scene making your character who's saying, oh, what a shame that he's now this human rights lawyer. He used to do puppets that, you know, he really had a talent. What a shame. You made that character the butt of the joke. So I feel like you're missing the point of your own artistic sort of point of view there. I mean, it's not a shame. He's doing meaningful, good work, and he's followed his heart, and he's done what makes him happy, and just not, you know, succeeding in this sort of narrowly defined societal way is not a shame. And so I feel like you need to remember that for yourself. You know, I hate to see you actually take the other side of that when you've
spent too much time at that yoga retreat. Look.
You wrote it.
Yeah, but here's the point, though, is that that character, Matt Besser's character in that scene, did not have the consciousness of that scene. You know what I mean? Like, he was not aware of that. I go into the situation aware of that dynamic. So I get it on both ends. You understand? I get it on both ends. When I'm in the position of Max Rabin, that character, I am the butt of the joke. But when I'm in the position of Besser, I'm also the butt of that joke.
Okay, well,
you
understand? I think this is one of those.
That's why I go through every potential comedic scenario in life, and I'm the butt of both ends of it.
Well, that's the price you pay for being artistically sensitive, I guess.
I am too butty.
You've got insight. But here's the thing. You've also got what a lot of liberals have is a strength and a weakness, but you have self-doubt. You have self-questioning. You have the ability to look at yourself and say, how do other people see me? How am I perceived, and what is my sort of relationship to the group? And that's a good thing, but it also can be a bad thing. As much as a liberal as I am and as you are, there's also a sort of conservative sort of self-reliance point of view that has to be there to balance that out, or else you go crazy.
Well, that's true, and I think I have some of that. But you're quoting Judge Learned Hand, if I'm not mistaken. That being that liberal is the side that's not quite sure it's right, or something like that.
Yeah, and
or
justice. That's healthy.
Justice is the side that it's not quite sure it's right. I can't remember.
It's something like that.
The quote. I can't. But meanwhile, this week, I get a text from Johnny Galecki this week too. It's unbelievable. I go through every day. I just get reminded about, like, just everyone I know, anybody I hear from is incredibly successful. Johnny Galecki now is, and you know, like, I'm half out of it. You know what I mean? Like, I don't, I'm
Two
not
thirds, baby.
Fully conscious of just how sort of like massively famous and successful this guy is. All I'm doing is reading, you know, I'm very aware of what the Cato Institute is saying about the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act. I just not realize, you know, and I mentioned it to Matt here in the office, and he's like, holy shit. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess, yeah. That show is hugely successful.
Big Bang Theory.
Yeah, well, it's Name Drop Friday. That's why I'm doing this, folks. I'm doing it for your benefit.
No, I love Name Drop Friday.
No, not for your benefit, for the audience's benefit.
Oh, well, I'm part of the audience.
All right, well, there you go.
But listen, Sam, you got to believe that you're doing what you're doing for a reason. I mean, come on. I mean, this is all funny and interesting. And
of course,
and yeah,
I do it for
love.
I do it for the members. And that raises a good point. We need more members, folks.
Become a member, folks.
You know, the I'll get a – well, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what I say anymore to ask for members because it doesn't seem to be happening. So we're going to have to
I'm confused about that myself. Sometimes I want you to be less needy sounding so people feel like, oh, it's an exclusive club that I want to join. And sometimes I feel like you got to stump more. I don't know either.
I don't know what the answer is, but neither way seems to work. And so I don't know what these people need. But
I don't know. Get Johnny Galecki to come on. I don't know.
Is that going to drive membership?
For a few
Johnny Galecki to buy 1,000 memberships. That's what I should do. All right.
He could afford it. That's right.
Probably. All right. What do you got for us this week?
All right. So on the theme of
you're competing against Game of Thrones now, Mad Men, and Veep. Although Veep.
Yeah, you know.
And Veep, then of course I watch Veep.
Yet, but
Matt Walsh. I got Walsh
on
there.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
I can't watch anything without seeing people I know.
Yeah.
It's annoying.
It's true, but they're not doing the good work that you are, Sam.
I don't know. I thought he did a pretty good job on that show.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He's doing pretty good work. And also, I like that Armando
Iannucci,
right?
Didn't you tell me to watch In the Loop?
Yeah, In the Loop. And
that's on my list, too.
His show, the show. I forget the name of the show. That was the original show.
Right. But I'm going to watch that in the loop. So there's one recommendation I'm going to take.
That's a good one. Okay. But here's, I got a deeper one for you today. On the theme of not caring about what other people think of you, I was happy to see that on Netflix streaming, there is one Cassavetes movie, and that is his somewhat romantic comedy, Minnie and Moskowitz. Have you seen this one?
Of course.
Okay. Well, I think it deserves another listen, another viewing, because that's the theme of the movie, is realizing that you're doing something that your ideas, your intellect, and your sort of sense of who you are publicly is telling you not to do, but your heart is telling you to do. And in this case, it's her falling in love with Seymour Cassell's character, this crazy car parker.
Right.
And it's important, and it's funny, and it's like what Ray Carney, the scholar who's the Cassavetes nut, he said is, it having a life is more important than having a career. And I think that's a theme that's good for all of us, me included. I mean, you know, you've made a couple movies and TV shows. I've merely had bit parts in them. So how do you think I sleep at night, Sam?
I don't know.
Yeah,
I guess the way you
know.
Do it is you keep going off to Puerto Rico and, you know, yoga retreats.
Well, I enjoy my life. I have a woman that I love. I have, you know, work that is, if not completely fulfilling, it's financially stable. And I'm putting some of my filmmaking skills to work. It's corporate video these days. It's paying the bills. But it's about having an inner life that matters. It's about having a sense of yourself. And you know what? If you can indulge me for a second, there's a quote from Cassavetes on Cassavetes that is about this, and I want to hear what your take on this is.
All right. I was going to say, I have no inner life. I actually think what I need to do is get an Xbox. But go ahead.
That may be a Band-Aid on the situation. But since you've also gone on record as saying you don't have emotions, I wanted to recommend this movie too. Because Cassavetes has said, what's wrong with society is that people have become such slaves to their lifestyles, such slaves to their politics, to their friends, that they don't have anything personal left. It's as if individuals have become invisible and nobody can see or reach their real selves anymore. They're doing what they think they should do and not what makes them happy. It's a struggle for you to be what you are. It is a struggle for other people to be what they are. And he says there comes a time, he says, they begin to think with other people's minds. The things that are most important part of your life are your inner feelings. And if that isn't broken, you'll be a fantastic person your whole life. I take that to heart. And I think that as much as we stump for certain ideas that we have, we have to realize that our feelings are important too. And I know conservatives are always about their feelings at the sort of expense of their intellect, and that's wrong too. But that balance is extremely important. And this movie really sums that up. There's no clear answers. There's no pat sort of moral, but it makes you struggle with that. And I want you to struggle with that this week if you can, Sam.
Oh, well, that's very sweet of you, Matthew. You know what's interesting, though, when I hear that I mean, there's such sort of clarity there from Cassavetes, and it's interesting because I think he struggled with that a lot in his life, right? I mean, here's
Absolutely.
A guy who vacillated, and I don't want to say vacillate. I mean, I think to a certain extent he funded much of his independent film career from a sort of parallel, very mainstream
That's right.
career. And certainly when I was doing these things as late as 2004, that was sort of that's what I was sort of modeling my career after. But
That's
without
right.
his talent in the film world and without his success in the mainstream world. But I was doing my version of it.
That's right. And that's all you could really ask. This guy was he was an iconoclast. He was a singular vision. He was a one in a million, you know. So.
Yeah.
But realizing that in the end, the only authority that you actually do have is your own inner sense of self. That gets lost, I think, sometimes when we try to be even-handed and try to take all points of view in at the same time as liberals tend to do, which is also good.
Yeah.
You there?
Yeah.
Are you there? Hello?
Yeah, I think you may need another week at that yoga retreat, buddy. Why don't you try one in Western Massachusetts or something?
Yeah, I was just in Boston for the first time ever, Sam.
The first time ever?
Like
wow.
First time ever. I had no reason to go there. Stayed at the W, Boston, because I was doing a video shoot for them, so that was kind of nice.
Holy cow.
But
well,
good
for you.
I was in your stomping grounds.
Yeah.
You know, Ray Carney actually asked me to come and speak to his class and as a cautionary tale about what could happen if you decide to be an independent filmmaker. I didn't know how to take that. I was somewhat honored, and I agreed to do it, but I had to do this shoot at the same time, so wound up not actually getting to do it.
That's hilarious. Well, I never went to the W Hotel there, but I'm sure.
Well, I won up on you, I guess.
There you go. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you, Matthew. The choice for this week, Minnie and Moskowitz. If you've never seen a Cassavetes film, folks, you're in for a treat. Now, of course, I think my favorite is probably Woman on the Verge of... what is it? No.
Woman Under the Influence. Woman the other one's an Almodovar movie.
Right.
Yeah.
Woman Under the Influence.
Yeah.
Or,
that's not streaming.
Or Husbands.
Yeah.
That
Woman
first
Under the Influence
scene,
is
that
my
first
favorite.
Scene in Husbands... The first two scenes in Husbands where Cassavetes, would I ruin it for people?
No, it's the first scene is what, when they're walking up at the funeral?
No. Wait, what was the scene where he comes down and he's in a house with Gina Rowlands? They have a fight. He leaves.
Are you talking about Peter Falk or John Cassavetes?
Cassavetes.
That is the first scene of Minnie and Moskowitz. She walks in. You don't know what he's doing there.
Oh.
He hits her.
Oh, all right. Yeah, then forget it.
Yeah.
Oh, that.
That's one of the best scenes of all, yeah.
Those two or three scenes, that, and the one that follows it, is fantastic. And in fact,
yeah.
I mean, Who's the Caboose? That was those two scenes about sort of always keeping you guessing as to where you can sort of
place
a character, you know,
yes.
Because we so always want in a movie to say like, oh, there's the good guy. There's the bad guy. And this is their relationship to each other. And those two scenes, really, I think I never wrote anything that I was interested in without contemplating what happens in those first two or three scenes.
Sam, you've pretty much nailed exactly what I love about Cassavetes in general and Minnie and Moskowitz in particular, that you're always zigzagging between the different characters and you're never quite sure where you stand. Is it funny? Is it sad? Is it scary? Yeah.
And that's why a lot of people can't watch those movies, because it's not pre-digested for them.
That's right. That's right. But I think your audience is probably up to the task.
Well, Matthew, you're just the bile to help people break that stuff down. So I appreciate you coming on.
It's quite the compliment, Sam.
All right, folks, that ends our lesser half of our program. Our better half of the program starts in just mere moments. Oh, we don't have too much time. We got some. You can call in at 646-257-3920, 646-257-3920. I am me at Majority FM. Monday of next week, Glenn Greenwald. Wednesday, I believe we will have Senator Russ Feingold. One other day next week, Eric Alterman. On Tuesday, it's looking more and more like we're going to go out to Bryant Park, folks, in New York City. I guess I'm not going to take the day off. But I'm going to get out of this office and broadcast from there. And maybe the show will just be me hanging out. Maybe that's the way I'll do it. It's just like, whatever.
For those who aren't aware, May Day actions begin at Bryant Park
in
New York City on Tuesday.
Yeah,
you're wondering why we were going to Bryant Park.
May2012.org, I think it is. We'll put a link on the blog for more information. I don't know. If you have any ideas of what I should be doing in Bryant Park, should you go out there with a hookah, man, and just...
I believe when the show starts in Bryant, our show starts at noon, the Guitar Me they have put together is starting at Bryant Park. So
aren't they starting rehearsal of the Guitar Me? Yeah, we'll play some of that. We'll stream some of that. Maybe we can take calls. I don't know. I don't know how we would take calls.
Yeah, I don't know if we could take... Well, maybe. With Skype on your... Who knows?
Could be. I think we could. Yep. We'll try it. All right, folks. See you in the better half.